Welcome to the RSM Talk Big podcast, helping you invest well, understand money, and achieve the best tax outcomes. Your hosts today are Andrew Sykes, Chris Oates, and Young Han.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to the RSM Talk Big podcast. My name's Andrew Sykes, and I'm joined today by your regular host, Young Han.
Hi.
And Chris Oates.
G'day, everyone.
Well, welcome everyone, and today's probably one of my favourite topics, and we're going to talk property. We're going to talk resi property in particular, and to do that, we're joined online by Julian Muldoon from One Group Property. G'day, Julian.
G'day, Andrew. Hello, everyone. Great to be here.
So, Julian, property expert, we've had him on before, and he's going to be here today and share some insights into the current state of the housing market and what he thinks 2023 is going to look like, and what a year and what a time. So we're sitting on the back of the ninth RBA interest rate rise in a row. We're starting to see some real stress come in for Australian property owners and those with debt. It's really starting to bite. And a lot of people are worrying about property, but also a lot of people are starting to say, well, what's the opportunity? I love down markets in property rather than booms, because when property prices go down, you have opportunity to buy. I personally find it hard to buy when prices are going up strongly. So I'd be really interested to get some of Julian's take on where he sees prices now, where we're at in the cycle, and how we're going to look going forward.
It will be very interesting because, you know, I'm in a different life cycle. So I've got a younger family, bigger mortgage, not gone through that property crisis in my life. It's probably the first one that I've seen in my life that actually was really low and then gone down up and then it's down again.
That's a really good point. Many of our listeners have only ever seen property go up.
Particularly in the last few years, just that run that the property market's had, and it's been a real shock. To everyone. It's with our clients from financial advice, talking cash flow, talking the impact just to people's lives. It's.
So, Julian, what sort of impact have you seen since rates have started to rise?
Well, first of all, just to kind of backtrack on the comments here around the negative side of it and not being exposed to it, it has gone down the last couple of years because started COVID, it went significantly down. And that was probably the best opportunity we saw in the last 20 years, was started 2020. And I'd say, looking back over the last 12 months, the second best time was as soon as the rates started to go up. Sentiment went through the floor and property values followed for a really, really short window. And then they kind of rebounded a little bit again, especially in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. But now it seems to be a more steady decline across all capital cities now. The only place that is in positive territory is really Perth, which is a pretty unique economic and property climate.
Okay, so you're picking up on that when the pandemic first started, we saw a bit of a sell-off in property, didn't we?
We did, yeah. I mean, listings went down about 40%, which was not too dissimilar to what we saw last year as well. So the market would have been a lot worse last year, I think, from a value point of view, if the listings maintained. And that's really the big question for this year too. If buying power diminishes, there's less buyers in the market because they can't afford to buy what they want. Are we going to see stock levels increase? If stock levels stay relatively low, there's less buyers, less sellers, and the market would definitely decline somewhat, but how significant that decline is, we'll have to wait and see.
And I think one of the biggest things of what stock could come on the market is we've seen interest rates and people were able to fix in such low rates and the impact that that's going to have. There's just in 2023, in the calendar year, there's something like 800,000 fixed loans that are around that 2% or under 2% interest rate that have to come off. It's something that, with the increase that's been there, it's something that hasn't been seen for 40 years.
I think that will definitely have an impact because I've seen some people that they got onto the market and they bought it because the interest rate was such a low rate so that they could afford it. But now with the interest rate going up and then their fixed deal is going to expire, they might not be in a position to be able to actually afford it.
So, Julian, as you can tell, there's a bit of fear out there about this fixed interest rate dropping.
Yeah.
What are you seeing? What do you think?
Well, if you go back to when rates were around 2%, I mean, we always ran our cash flows for investors at 5 and 6%. We never changed that. If anything, it goes up from there, not down from there. And I think the banks were running them around the same levels. But if rates get up around 6, 7% in the pocket, then that means that we're up above those assessment buffers. So it's a bit of an unknown as to whether people can afford them. But I mean, also, if you've got investment properties, I mean, rents are up anywhere from 10 to 20 to 30%, depending on where you're situated. And the vacancy rates are below 1%. So you're not going to have a vacant property and therefore no income. It's just whether you can cover that difference. And I think when you're looking at owner occupiers, I mean, they're not going to fire sell their home because rates are high, because you'd think they're still going to be employed. So I also think there's a lot of positive pressure out there as well. You know, if immigration's firing up, and that's going to put even more pressure on the rental market. Construction levels are declining rapidly because a lot of new builds are just not feasible anymore, and build prices are too high, and new building starts are backing off, as are renovations. So you can see how the other cycle starts to build. Population grows, less development starts, less projects are feasible. And then naturally you'd think that within, say, 24, early 25, if rates are back down around 4%, you could see another swing that's in the market that's really, really positive. So I think one of the questions that everyone's got at the moment is, well, does that make 2023 the year of uncertainty but the year of opportunity? And it's a pretty compelling case to say that is the case.
Yeah, what you're saying really ties in with something I've seen over my career as an accountant, is that house prices tend to be what we call really sticky downwards. So they'll shoot up, but they don't really tend to, it's really hard to push them down, because as you touched on, Julian, if the price is not right, people just won't sell unless they're forced to.
Correct. Well, the data on that is, in the last 20 years, I think it's been 5 times that the property market's gone into decline, when there was regulation around investment lending and Royal Bank commissions and, federal elections and negative gearing talk being abolished and so forth. All of that put the market into negative territory, but it only ever went down between 5 to 10%. And places like Sydney went down the hardest generally, and more to your smaller markets, your Adelaide, Canberras and those places, they tend to hold up reasonably well. And we've already really seen that 10%. So if you're looking at, which is not a perfect indicator of future performance, but historically, if you look at how the market's performed, it really has only ever got 10% below its peak. And this time they're picking it to go 15 to 20. So if you consider that this is a more drastic decline that's predicted, then once again, you would say, well, okay, when it goes back the other way, it's going to go pretty hard, especially if we've got all this pent-up demand in the buy market because of lack of affordability around higher interest rates, plus the population growth that we're expected to see. And so from that point of view, it could be the most severe downturn, be the best opportunity.
And I think that's why it's important to have the strategy set up, even when you're actually buying a property, just like when you're looking at share market, investing in share market or whatever the other investments are. You need to, my point, when it comes down to property investment, it's like the long-term thing. You shouldn't be thinking of, oh, it's a peak, so I need to sell and it's down, I'll buy it. You just shouldn't be doing that, because you're never going to be perfectly right on the right time.
It's the old saying of time in the market, not trying to time it.
But everyone touches on predictions and forecasts. I find it really funny that we're happy to listen to the predictions of people who are now picking a drop, and nobody picked the boom over the last 2 or 3 years. I think forecasts, I always take any forecast, good or bad, with a grain of salt.
And that's where it becomes down to the quality of the asset you're investing in, whether it fits into your long-term objectives. And, it's a probably amazing time to upsize. It's a difficult time to buy newer property or newer builds. If you look at premium suburbs where someone's got a nice contemporary home they built 3-4 years ago, well, the cost to replicate that is significantly higher than potentially the comparable sales that are historical. So people are paying premiums at the moment for renovated properties or newly built properties in more blue chip suburbs. No one predicted that either. So there's little small subsegments that are growing really, really well. And then there's major, major infrastructure investment in places like Western Corridor of Melbourne, Western Sydney, the Aerotropolis around Badgerys Creek. There's so much going on, which is all these little anomalies that are just not as widely impacted by all that macro stuff, because people are moving there for job opportunities and there's rezoning of areas happening. So I think we also get a bit too stuck in the big macro drivers and forget that, well, hang on, there's actually a significant amount of really positive stories that are happening more at a suburb and regional city level.
So you're saying, if I read between the lines of what you're saying, is, you know, take consideration to those macro drivers, interest rates, what's happening, but focus on the underlying asset, the quality of the cash flow, the reasons why a specific property should either hold its value or increase over time.
Correct. 100% right. I think what can happen now is, well, what happened when the market rises rapidly is everyone just buys anywhere and the tide rises, and, you know, similar returns that happen across, you know, a vast number of suburbs that are not equal suburbs. Similar properties perform exactly the same, even though one's on a busy road, one isn't, because everyone just prices everything the same. And the market, you know, slows down, goes out, the tide goes out, and all of a sudden the quality suburbs or the quality drivers maintain or continue to grow. We all know it's hard to buy in premium suburbs all the time, regardless of really what the macro drivers are. And I'd say the same as now. You know, if you've got big things happening, like a new airport going, you know, you've got new train stations happening and schools are being upgraded, well, they're areas that are going to continue to perform reasonably well. Doesn't mean they're going to grow every single month of every year, but they're going to perform really well. And the time to get into those areas is now, when the sentiment's down and there's less competition, because they're probably going to go harder than everywhere else when the market swings the other way.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to get straight to it and ask you the question that I want to know. And I think everybody who's listening and noting, this is general advice and not advice for anyone to go out and buy a property. But the question we always get asked, is the property market going to crash? And is 23 a good year to get into the market? You know, is it going to crash or are we buyers? What's your take?
Well, the truth is borrowing capacities are going backwards. So, you know, if you could afford $1 million 12, 18 months ago, you might be down around 850 now, you know, as a really baseline scenario. So you'd have to assume then that the buying power is not there, the values are going to slide. But once again, it really depends on what kind of stock levels come through, and also depends on the areas you're looking at. Because I'd say there's a lot of, you know, new property belts where you might have 90% lands and people bought at real premium prices, and there's going to be significant decline in values in those areas. Or you could have some larger projects where build costs are blown up and they're trying to readjust contract values. And once again, it just doesn't meet the established property market value. So therefore, there's a bit of a discrepancy between what people are paying and what they're really worth. So there's definitely going to be some real hurt pockets this year. But are they property styles you would be buying? And then generally we say, well, no, we're not really wanting to invest in those areas. We're looking better, more established suburbs and you know, more established properties, essentially. And in most of those areas, well-located property that ticks all the location drivers, they're generally going to hold their value quite well. But there will be opportunities that fall through the cracks. There'll be what we would call, you know, assets that are, you know, listed at the wrong time. You know, there just isn't the buyers in the market in that moment. They've committed elsewhere and, you know, they've got to sell and they need to get a deal done. And they lived in the house for 20 years. They don't owe any money on it. So whether they sell it for 1.2 or 900 really doesn't matter. They're not trying to get rid of any liabilities. Those kind of opportunities are going to be in abundant this year. But you've got to have a wide lens on the market. So if you research one suburb and watch it for 12 months, there may be no dream opportunities that pop up. So you've got to have a much wider lens, a lot more research, a lot more irons in the fire. And you've got to be willing to show up and do due diligence on a lot more assets, attend a lot more auctions, see what passes in. Vendor situation's massive this year. And agents are probably going to make 60% of what they made in the last couple of years. So they're going to be willing to do deals and pull properties onto the market. So, yeah, I think if you've got the right, if you focus your energy in the right areas, I think this year is just going to be a phenomenal opportunity. That's what we're seeing. But it's got to be something you can afford to do with higher interest rates as well.
So you're sticking true to that theme of good quality assets that have potential to grow. Good areas, good assets, but you're saying do the extra research, be patient, and use this year as an opportunity to get a good quality asset at a better value price.
100%. And look, bigger blocks that you can subdivide. I mean, no one's buying them at the moment because there's just no immediate opportunity. There's too much risk. There's a higher holding cost because there's, you know, less income on a more expensive asset. I mean, if you've got a bit of cash and you can, you know, mitigate some of that risk because you can, you know, going with a lower LVR, for example, then, well, that's an opportunity. So I think this is where tailored strategies are absolutely critical this year. It's really hard to give blanket advice, and blanket advice is probably a risky thing anyway, because everyone's going to have a totally different personal dynamic, financial dynamic, and property dynamic as to what they want to get out of it, and also different risk appetite at a time like this as well. But, yeah, there's definitely some subsectors from a property style point of view, and, you know, things like, for example, multi-unit sites where there's 4 to 6 units on the site. I mean, they were, you know, 2% yield, but they're back up around 5% and 6% yields again. So all of a sudden that's an opportunity again. So I think it's really important time to seek advice, get, you know, clear strategy in place, because there's opportunity in a lot of places that maybe you're not looking. And then if everyone's sitting back waiting for the tide to turn, well, naturally you're just going to have more competition when that happens.
I think that kind of gives us a little bit of relief that it's not as bad as we think. And then, you know, the scary interest rate rise is not going to be always the negative thing. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people, and especially in my age group, there are people who's looking to buy their first home or saving up for it. But then, you know, because of the interest rate, they're afraid of it. What's the advice that you'd like to give it to them?
Yeah, cracking the market's really challenging. And I think that's something that, you know, depending on where you live in Australia is a different scenario. For example, the Sydney market's really tough because rents are so high. If you're renting and trying to save your deposit for a home in a market where prices are also really high, it's a really challenging dynamic. And even if you're making great money, it can be tough. And if you add kids into the equation, all of a sudden you can get locked into that, into renting for a long term. Whereas in the smaller capital cities, it tends to be a lot more achievable. Canberra, perhaps a bit of an anomaly around that just through that, you know, the median price there. But, you know, I think I just encourage them to consider medium density and high density assets, or moving further out of town and being willing to travel. I think a lot of people get frustrated that the housing market, middle ring and inner city, is unaffordable. Well, that was probably the same for every generation that's come through. Not many people have been able to buy the single-fronted Victorian terrace walking distance to the MCG for their first property. You've got to start thinking about these other property styles that, you know, are probably more suited to the budget as well. And that, look, it is a really tough decision because, you know, if your dream is to be in the housing market, but you buy a unit, well, housing market performs 8%, units at 3%, you can get priced out over the next 5 or 7 years. So it is a big question whether you trade the lifestyle for the suburbs. And I think it really comes down to what, you know, what you ideally want to be in with your, you know, with your future family dynamic. And yeah, the good thing now is the flexibility around work, which has allowed people to say, well, look, maybe I will move to Wollongong or Geelong or Newcastle, and, you know, maybe I will chase a lower price point and a better lifestyle, but still maintain my capital city income. So I think that's a pretty special landscape that we didn't have 2 years ago.
And that's exactly spot on with what I've gone through is that, you know, when we first married, we had a one-bedroom apartment in the Canberra CBD, and then we just sold that. And we actually, and with the kids starting up school, we're actually looking at the suburb that's got a good school, you know, safe and easy to get around. And we, you know, we just invested in that kind of that house property in a good catchment area, especially with the education, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, and Julian, you touched a little bit on timing there. I will say that another thing I've learned in my career is it's never a good time to start a family, to start a business or change jobs, or buy a house. It's just do it when you can, because if you wait for perfect timing, it's never great.
Yeah, there's advantages at both ends, isn't it? You know, kids later in life, you're more financially set up, but you're going to be a lot older when the kids are growing up, and you know, the other dynamic is getting in early, and you may be forced to move out to the suburbs to find that space. But I mean, we're pretty lucky in Australia that most property markets perform reasonably well. And generally speaking, it's the strategy that does yield returns over the long term. And if you, you know, manage your debt reduction well and you pick the right property, I mean, it can really set you up to give you a lot of options to either go coastal or move closer into the city. And I think choice and options is what everyone's really looking for.
So you're saying even if you your budget limits you, so you're a first home buyer and your budget limits you to say an outer suburb, you're saying there's still good opportunities there?
Oh, definitely. And I think the reinvesting strategy is a really powerful one at the moment too, when rates are higher and you can use if it's relevant and suitable, you know, negative gearing to offset some of those costs and continue to rent in a cheaper area. I mean, that's a strategy that works really well in a place like Melbourne where you can rent relatively you know, cheap properties compared to places like Sydney. Doesn't work as well in Sydney, but there's definitely ways you can. I know I did that personally. I mean, my first three properties were investment properties, and I rented it in blue chip suburb that I couldn't afford. And then selling off those properties allowed me to buy the family home when I was ready. So there's so many ways to tackle it, which actually gives you the best of both worlds, which I think we're very lucky to have here in Australia.
Yeah, and at each year, a government have different incentives for the first home buyer. So I think the last year was that if you owned the home before, but then if you rented, so you sold your home and then you've been renting for 2 years, then you're eligible to receive the grant again. So it's actually also important to looking at what's available and, you know, utilising that rental market as well as investing.
Yeah, so get advice.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. The key thing is talk to the people that know what they're doing. We're all good at what we do, whereas look at Julian, good in the property market. But we've touched on rent and yield a few times, Julian. You say Melbourne, you can do it, it's a little bit cheaper. Sydney's a bit more expensive. Overall, I think rental prices have gone up. What's driving that?
Well, yeah, it was really fascinating. I mean, one of the things that scared us the most being in the property game 2 years ago, and especially we're Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, but being in the Melbourne office was, you know, no immigration. We thought, wow, you know, 2.5% population growth for so many years and it's gone into negative territory. We're losing people. What's going to happen to the rental market? Because if a vacant property is no income, I mean, that's, and then people are losing jobs, that's a diabolical situation. But it ended up being that none of it happened, and it was the expansion of single households that was amazing. I think there was about 35,000 new single households formed above the norm. People just decided they wanted their own space and they needed to work from home, so they needed to have, you know, an office. They want to be in share houses. And I'm sure there's probably some relationships that unfortunately didn't make it too, which added to that data.
Yep.
But all of that really meant, and apparently it's been a growing trend, and what COVID seemed to do is accelerate people moving to regional and smaller capital cities, which was already happening, but it accelerated it, and it accelerated the expansion of single households as well, which is really, really fascinating. But also to a lot of these coastal regions that had, you know, 40% rental market, all of a sudden people were buying secondary assets, lifestyle assets, and a lot of investment properties turned into homes. You know, if you go to Surf Coast of Victoria, I mean, there's just no long-term rentals down there anymore because a lot of people bought holiday houses, and then a lot of the holiday houses are on short-term rental. So that's really squeezing the market there as well. Same with Airbnb. If you go to places like small places, like, you know, Noosa and Port Douglas and other places, very hard to get long-term rentals. So I think there's a number of factors that are really feeding into it. And really a big one was it just accelerated a lot of what we're already seeing with how people were choosing to live.
Yeah, I know quite a few people that moved or went down to the south coast of New South Wales.
Yeah, because you can work from home.
Yeah. Spent weeks and weeks.
There'll be some elasticity in that. I think there'll be some, those, there's some of the markets I think could have some risk this year as well. Not all. I think the affordable price point in coastal regions will probably be okay, but I think the more premium might struggle. A lot of bold decisions to buy, you know, $2 to $4 million property in coastal areas that I think a lot of buyers are not going to be using enough to justify it at, you know, 6-7% interest rates if they get up around that. So that's definitely going to be an interesting one to watch.
And that's a really important point, isn't it? Is that pricing ultimately is driven by supply and demand. If we see there's probably in some of those regions only a limited demand for coastal property in the $2 to $4 million range, it's not going to take a lot of sales to get some real pressure on the price, is it?
No, definitely not. And that's what the media love, and they'll put it up as a headline, you know, 40% drop in postcode ABC. And you saw it when the city market went down, you know, the biggest drop in 40 years, they were calling it late last year, and it was all over the Fin Review and all the reputable media sources. And if you look closely at the data, it was only the top end of town. You know, most of the kind of $7 to $1.5 million suburbs are actually still growing. It was just that the blue chip had come back rapidly, which it always does. It rises rapidly, it comes back rapidly. And naturally, that's what kind of meets the headline. So the only other, I think, guidance I'd give is if you read a nasty headline, read the article, because sometimes there's a bit more detail in it.
Yeah, and that's right. There's a lot of fear, and yeah, bad news sells newspapers, as they say. You don't get a lot of people reading if you write an article that says everything's okay.
It's just one thing on that too. And the game plan that was mentioned earlier is just super critical, because if you don't have a game plan, then you're making decisions on a whim. And if you do start to get negative sentiment, or a friend of yours gets in your ear and says, oh, actually, I don't think you should do it now, you actually start to get really uncertain. I think the uncertainty around what decision to make is almost more stressful than making a decision. And yeah, you are a bit of a yo-yo to the media and to other people influencing your decision if you're not leaning on professional independent partners that can really help you get the right game plan in place.
Yeah, and that's particularly emphasised when we say, okay, well, we're not buying property for a month or 2 months or even 2 years to make a short-term gain. We're buying property to live in it or as a long-term investment. And if we consider property over a 10, 20, 30-year cycle, timing becomes irrelevant. It's about your capacity and your plan to be able to buy and your strategy and how you set yourself those goals so you can wake up at the start of each week and say, okay, what am I doing this week to move myself towards that goal of buying an investment property or my first home, et cetera. And then once you get to that point, don't worry about the market. Get some advice, get a good asset and hang in there for the long term. Seems to be how it works best.
Definitely.
You did touch on before, Julian, about apartments, and apartments grow at 3% and housing at 8%. Do the apartments come down more when we have a downturn as well? They don't grow as quickly and they come down quicker. What's the view on that?
It really depends on what's driving the market. Like last year, we saw houses come back a lot more significantly than units. The units generally take a lot longer to get moving in an upward cycle, and then they have a longer tail at the back end of it, and especially when it's driven by affordability. So for example, places like Brisbane, where the apartment market had been relatively weak for a number of years, meant that there was no supply coming into it. So once the housing market moved to a level that was considered kind of unaffordable for the average buyer, all of a sudden they moved to medium density and high density. So it's got to be driven by affordability. It's just generally why apartments don't perform well in smaller cities like maybe an Adelaide or a Perth in a lot of the cases. And there's always exceptions to the rule if it's a beautiful building and a unique location and, you know, oversized place and views and et cetera. But the general buyer's apartment, you've got to be buying in places where it's driven by affordability. I mean, Sydney, eastern suburbs of Sydney's apartment market is on par with, you know, Melbourne or Canberra's housing market. And that's purely based on the fact that the lifestyle and affordability drivers in those areas. And then also too, the supply is the hard one. I mean, if you buy a middle ring house, which is a 10 to 15 K radius, generally in most capital cities from the CBD, they're reducing the supply every year because they're knocking them over to build townhouses. So if you buy a house and there's 100 other houses, pretty sure in 2 years there'll be 80 houses, and then another 2 years there'll be 60 houses. They're slowly disappearing, except for the character heritage or the, you know, really big ones. So initially your supply demand equation is getting better and better. Whereas buying units, the supply is always growing, unless you're in really tightly held catchments like Melbourne would be, East Melbourne, you know, places like that where there's very, very limited places and parcels to build. So that's the challenge with apartments. There's always supply coming through.
Excellent, Julian. And thanks for that, mate. There's some really good advice in there, and that's about long-term, about getting quality assets, about planning what you're doing, having a strategy. Get advice, have a strategy. About overall, buy a good quality asset. You're not going to worry so much about the market. Guys, that's all we've got the time for today. Julian, thank you very much once again for joining us. Your advice is always appreciated, mate.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And young Chris, and from all of the team at RSM, this has been our Talk Big podcast. Encourage you to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, and also recommend it to a friend as well. We'd love to have more subscribers. Thank you once again for your time, and look forward to catching you on the next RSM Talk Big podcast.
Talk Big. Create, save and protect with RSM.